because I always did my homework. I was taught by the old Scout, do your homework. You can't imagine, yeah, you can, up to a point, under the old rule, before that draft ever went into effect in 1963, you knew who got all the players? The Scout that did his homework. He got the players. In other words, if I did my homework, got well acquainted with Joe Doakes and his family and his friends, when it come time for him to sign the next spring and I'm there, I'll guarantee you I got the advantage. I've got the advantage. What used to happen, there'd be 8 or 10 clubs come in on the ballpark. I got the advantage on this ballpark. I know this kid real well. I know his mother. I know his dad. I know his twin sisters. I know his brother. I know his bank, their banker. I know the preacher. I know everybody, right? And I've done my homework, right? And I get the ball there, right? Okay, about 3 or 4 scouts the next morning pick up the telephone and call their boss, and they'll say, well, I lost that Austin boy. Well, you did, yeah. Hugh Alexander signed him. But Hugh Alexander cheated, and Hugh Alexander did this. And I didn't cheat. I had done my homework. So later on, I'd see some of those farm directors, and they'd say, hey, when your scout called you on the goddamn phone this spring after he lost Dan Austin in so-and-so town, did he tell you I cheated on the ballpark? He said, he damn sure did. I said, never cheated in my life. I don't tell you one thing. I'm not against your scout. But he used the biggest alibi he could figure out to get out of that goddamn deal because he didn't do his homework. That's what the whole thing amounted to.
In other words, you anticipated, hey, I got to be thinking only what I'm doing right now, but I got to be looking 2, 3, 4 months down the road or next year.
You got to. You got to. And the easy thing to do, like I said, yesterday, the day before, a week ago, a year ago, 6 months ago, the easiest job in baseball is to be a major league scout.
Now, you just told me it was the hardest.
No. I said a scout, area scout, free agent scout. That's the toughest job. The easiest job in baseball is to be a major league scout. Let me tell you what a major league scout does. Talking about a major league scout. He don't scout anything but the big league. I was the first Major League scout that was ever hired. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I was the first one to be classified as a Major League scout. No free agent scouting. Stay in the American National League all year long and set up trades. I was the first scout to ever do that when I went to the Phillies. Okay. So the easiest job in baseball is to be a Major League scout. And I haven't scouted free agent ball players now in about 20 years. I don't even get into it. But I got her name. I got all those names. I called her up. I said, this is Hugh Alexander. Yes, sir, Mr. Alexander. How are you? I said, I will be in town 5 nights. We leave me a ticket each night. You have to call up in advance, during the day. And it's a reciprocal deal. You can take it right behind home plate. They always have a section open for Major League scouts. There'll be 8 or 10 seats they don't sell. They keep it for scouts. And we do the same thing on the whole club, all the clubs. It's a reciprocal deal.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, tell Lee Thomas I'm in town, and I'll be here 5 nights, and Bill Giles, tell him the same thing. I'd like to have an audience with those people while I'm here. Yes, sir, Mr. Alexander, I'll take care of them. But within just a day or two, I got an audience with Bill Giles and Lee Thomas. Right? We sat down and talked about trades and so on and so forth. Okay, now I go to the ballpark. I go up in the press room. I have a nice little meal in the press room. I got all the stats right there at my disposal. I get all the stats, sheets after sheets of both clubs, right? I have a little bite to eat, a night game or a day, whatever it is, eat in the press room free. Just leave a tip. I go down to my seat, and I study all those stats, watch 9 innings of baseball, and go to the hotel. But I don't do that. I go see the general manager. I visit with. I go down and talk to the coaches or the manager. Okay, the easiest job in baseball is like a lot of Major League scouts. And when I recommend to be Major League scouts, like Scotty Reed and Moose Johnson and some of those guys, I say, the easy job is to go to the ballpark, watch the game, and go to the hotel.
They can get habit forming in a hurry.
Real quick. I said, you haven't done anything. You've watched a baseball game is all you've done. I said, you got to go talk to the general manager of that club, and you got to go talk to the each manager for 5 minutes or 10 minutes through the screen, or go to the clubhouse, or talk to some of the coaches, and get some information. And that becomes a little harder, but the easy one is just go to the ballpark. Get on the airplane, fly to Cleveland, go to the ballpark for 3 nights in a row, love to eat, go to the ball game, go back to home. That's easy. That's the easy job in baseball. And that's the easiest job in the whole world.
Yeah.
The whole world. Because you're really not doing anything. You're watching the ball game.
Yeah,
that's
just going through the motions and right. Say, I put in my time, go back, collect my paycheck in the month.
Okay, now, the way I operate, and I've taught a lot of scouts to do the same thing, and some of them are doing it too, and by God, it's paying off, is, okay, I'll go into Milwaukee, and I let Harry Dalton know that I'm in town, mm-hmm. and he'll send word he wants to see me tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock. Okay, so I'm at the ballpark early, up his office, and we sat there. Now, in the meantime, I got to call the Chicago Cubs. If I don't already know, I got to call the Cubs. I got to call Jim Fry, and that'll be Larry Hine. And look, I've got to be at the ballpark today at 4 o'clock to meet with Harry Dalton. Do we have any players available to the Milwaukee Ball Club? Or I might say, when I talked to you a few days ago, Jerome Walton's available. Yeah, he's still available. Okay, fine. So when I go to sit down with Harry Dalton, the first question, after we spar it a little bit, he'll say, who's available off your club, Huey? I tell him, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I know who's available,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I say to him, who's available off your club? Okay, now if it's compatible, we talk a little bit. If it's not compatible, we visit 30, 40 minutes or an hour and shake hands, and that's it, okay? But if you go to the ballpark and just see the game and go back to the hotel, you haven't done anything.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't accomplished anything except you saw a baseball game, right?
Yep.
You haven't talked to the general manager.
Okay, you talk to some of the GMs, say, who's available on your team? Let's match with what I have available. Which gets to my question, and I could be here the rest of the day, but I got to see my family here shortly.
Okay, that's all right. Okay, all
right. Whitey Herzog told me one time that you build a team to suit where you play and not just your home field when he was managing the St. Louis Cardinals.
You're right. He was right.
So that
he built
is
on
the basis for your determining who's a, let's take the Chicago Cubs. Most of their games are in daytime yet today, grass and dirt, not artificial turf. And by and large, it's still in the National League. There's more grass and turf, I think, than artificial turf in the National League.
Right.
So is that a large measure, the kind of field of Wrigley Field, to build the kind of ball team, and that tells you who's available for a trade?
When Dallas Green left the Phillies, went over to the Cubs at
uh-huh.
the end of 81.
Yeah, he left artificial turf and went over to...
Right. But he was a sharp guy, and he had learned an awful lot over the years from Paul Owens and I.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked to him. In fact, Paul Owens and I talked to him into taking the job. He didn't want to leave the Phillies. And we told him, you have to take the job. You don't
mm-hmm.
You have no choice. You have to take the goddamn general manager job, because all you're going to be over here is a manager, and you'll get fired doing that.
Yeah.
And then you'll be a farm director and scouting director for $90,000 a year, or $105,000, right? And you're offered $250,000 to start with at Chicago. You have to take it. You owe it to your family and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to take it. So finally he took it. But he went over there with that one idea, because he said to me, I have to build an offensive club. And I said, you bet your ass you got to go offense. You got to go offense. And you got to have some pitching, ball pitchers that can keep the damn ball down and don't get that ball up in the air in Chicago. I said, you know what about it. You pitched the big league. That's what he did. He went over in 82, 84, they won the championship, didn't he?
That's right.
With power hitters, Ron Say and Hall and got Sutcliffe and all those guys,
yeah.
And they won the damn pennant, got beat in the playoff. So then Dallas ended up getting fired, and I stayed on. And Jim Fry said to me, okay, he was the manager in 84.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you have to have power hitters, because Dallas Green and I signed Andre Dawson as a free agent ball player, you remember, for $600,000 a year. That day when they put that contract in front of Dallas, fill it in. And he was just kind of joking. He filled in $600,000, then they took it.
Mm-hmm.
But later on, he's making $3.3 million.
Yep.
But and the last year we went out, we got George Bell, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they already had Sandberg. So in 89, looks like we got a chance to win it. We had a pretty good club. We got a chance, but we're short. We're short a couple of three ball players. So now it's August. And I called Jim Fry and I said, I'm going to Atlanta. I remember where I was. Philadelphia or somewhere, or New York, I don't know. He said, what are you going to Atlanta for? I said, I'm going to go try to get Osenmacher. He said, you can't get Osenmacher. I said, I might. I said, I just heard a rumor. And I get all the damn rumors. I get them all. Because I keep my nose right, mm-hmm. or my ear right to the ground, and I get all them damn rumors. And I heard the rumor, like a day or two before that, that Nixon, the manager, mm-hmm. and Osenmacher were really at odds. They had a big flare-up. Mm-hmm. I heard it. And I said, I just heard that Nixon and Osenmacher at odds, and I'm going into Atlanta and said, we can get Osenmacher. He's goddamn good luck. I hope you can. I go into Atlanta the next day, get hold of Bobby Cox, who was the general manager, not the manager.
Yeah.
I didn't say to him, and I have my own way to trade. Okay. A lot of people are now trying to copy all that, mm-hmm. but that's all right. Well, because I'll do whatever they want to. I go to Bobby Cox, and we talked a little bit, and I said, would Osenmacher be available? He said, he damn sure would. The next day, we had Osenmacher traded for him. The very next day, and he reported to Chicago and did a hell of a job in the month of September. Did a hell of a job. Okay. So I'm talking to Jim Fry. I'm still in Atlanta. When we make the deal, he said, where are you going from there? Okay. I said, I'm going to San Diego. He said, where are you going to San Diego? I said, you know how close Jack McKee and I are. He said, I sure do. He said, who are you going to try to get? I said, Salazar and Marvell Wynn, both of them. He said, boy, I hope you can. But he said, I don't think you can. I said, well, I'm going to find out. Next day, I'm in San Diego, meet with Jack McKeon, who was the general manager and the manager, right?
Yes, right.
Meet him at 2:30 in his office downstairs. I said, Jack, I need a favor. I said, damn, you and I are buddies. But I need a favor to try to win that pennant over there at Chicago. He said, what do you need? I said, I need Salazar and Marvell Wynn. He said, damn, he said, I'll let you have Marvell Wynn because he's about finished as a player. But he said, boy, he said, that Salazar is a big favorite over here. I said, I need him to play third base in the worst way. And I said, yeah, damn, you got to remember he's 33 or 4 years old. Then he's about 36 now or 7. He said, okay, I'll talk. But I got to have Schiraldi. I said, you got him. You can have Schiraldi. He said, I got to have 2 other players. The next day, or 2 days later, just before the deadline, which is the 31st of August, mm-hmm. you got to make those trades. We gave him Schiraldi, Darren Jackson, and Phil Stevenson from Marvell Wynn and Salazar, and they both come over and hit us right into Osenmacher. They played us right into the pennant. We could beat them 12. Well, we won the pennant with those 3 ball players. I mean, they helped that much in the month of September.
It made the difference.
The first ball game that Salazar played, he got on playing and came out to Chicago. The first game he played, I'm just giving you a point. Not that I'm trying to take credit or anything, but the first game he played, I'm watching the game on television somewhere in some hotel room somewhere. In the 8th inning, he hit a single to drive in the tying run. Drove in tying run. In the 10th inning, he hit a double to right field to drive in the winning run. So he just won the damn game for it. He tied it and won it for it. And won the, and that helped win the pennant. Marvell Wynn, he did well, you know, in his role. So that's the way you got to operate. But again, we go back to what I was saying earlier. The easiest job in baseball is to be a major league scout if you don't do it right. That's the easiest job. I tell you, all you're going to do is watch 9 innings of baseball.
Hobnob with a lot of famous people.
That's right. And get a free meal up at the press room. And then when the ball game's over, a couple of you guys go to the hotel, same hotel, go in the bar and have some drinks and have a good time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you haven't done a damn thing except watch 9 innings of baseball. That's all you've done. Mm-hmm. You know, the hard part of it is go talk to those general managers. It's like when a general manager says to me, Huey, because everybody knows me, and they know that everything I do is I put it on the table. I put it right on the table. I do not go by the way I left field on anybody. I don't do it. I'm really an honest person. And I put it, if I'm going to make a trade with Dan Austin, I'm going to put it right on the table to you. I'm going to say, Dan, would you trade Joe Dokes? And you'll say, no, I can't afford to trade him. Okay, fine. How about we could use Jimmy Jones? I'll talk about Jimmy Jones. That's what you'll say to me. Yeah, I'll talk about him. I said, what would you have to have, or what would you be thinking about for Jimmy Jones? And you'll say, would you trade, I know you won't trade Dunston, you won't trade Andre Dawson, you won't trade Sandberg. Would you trade Mark Grace? We might talk about Mark Grace. I went into Kansas City last year, and I'm not sure I want to push it off. Let me.
This should not.
What I just thought.
No, that was off. That was off.
Is that at least I knew who we could talk about trading. Mm-hmm. Now, if a young scout goes in there and he's got a meeting with Kirk Robinson, and Kirk Robinson throws that deal at him, he's got to say, I don't know. I'll have to talk to Jim Fry.
That's right.
I have to talk to Jim Fry because I had to talk to Jim Fry that morning. You follow me?
So you got to develop that that communication, that chemistry, that with the GM. That's one of the first jobs you would recommend to a new scout.
Well, if he's going to be a major league scout, if he's going to scout in the big leagues, mm-hmm. he's got to be close to his general manager.
Yeah.
And if he didn't, well, then he can't do anything.
He can't do anything. He's always going to say, I'll have to get back in touch with you.
All he could do all year long would just go see a ball game.
Yeah.
And then sit down and make the reports. Now, like me, I don't make reports.
Okay.
You know, like scouts say to me, big league scouts who just got in the big league. You know, there's about 650 ball players in the big leagues. You know that?
Yeah.
In the two leagues, there's about 650. I think like hell said I'd make 650 reports, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would too. My mind would get cluttered in a hurry.
Well, there's 650 ball players in the big leagues that you'll see if you scout like I do. I scout American and National League both, and there's 650 ball players. You mean tell me I got to put down Dan Austin and write about Dan Austin, and then I got to put down Joe Dokes?
Well, I couldn't keep track of the paper.
Well, you'd have a stack of reports that high.
Yeah.
So years ago, I said, if I'm going to scout the big leagues, I cannot make reports on 650 players. It's just that simple. What I'll do, and I had the same deal. I had the same deal with the Phillies, and I got the same deal now with the Cubs, is, okay, I'll keep the lineups. Before you leave, I'll show you all the lineups. Let me show you real quick. Well, here's a game. October the 2nd. October the 2nd, I saw this game. Seattle at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fleming pitched. And for the Texas Rangers, Jose Guzman pitched the ball game. I didn't make any notes of it, but I got the game.
It looks almost blank.
Well, yeah, but I know all those players,
too. I know you do.
And it's just one of these every night at the ball game. I keep them on. I got another stack in there that's high.
Mm-hmm.
And if I wanted to go through and check some of these names, maybe a rookie, I've got them. At the end of the year, somewhere, and all these are little things I use. And I could check it out if I wanted to, but I don't have to check it out.
Yeah.
Really. But they're there.
Hugh, we've been talking 2 hours.
That's quite a while.
Yes, it is. I'm going to ask... In fact, I had 5 pages of notes and questions prepared. I got through 1/4 of one page.
See, this is time-consuming all
day. I know. And so what I wanted to ask you, if I could give you a call back maybe in a month or two, that I could, if you're interested, come back up and...
I wish you would.
And
I wish
continue
you would.
It.
We just barely hit the
I know that. But,
here.
You know, you're... You are baseball's first major league scout. You've been in the game longer than anybody else. You've had a track record of 63 that you've signed.
Well, that I signed and helped sign. Some of them I didn't sign.
Well,
in other
but
words,
the point is...
At one time in 1961, I believe it was 61, I was working for the Dodgers, and we didn't do real good. And Buzzy had Buzzy was a gentleman. He had a meeting. And he called Burt Wells and I out of the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Texas, and Hal Campanis was there, and Fresco Thompson before he died, and Buzzy, and Mr. O'Malley, and Peter O'Malley, everybody was in that room, and Buzzy gets up, and he said, and I could use a word he used on here, anyway, and Buzzy gets up, and he said, well, we got this meeting, because right now we got a horse shit farm system, which words he used, because Buzzy's that kind of a person, and he said, I want some ball players signed. He said, I can't play dollar bills out in the field. We're drawing 3 million people a year, and we're making money hand over fist, and I can't play dollar bills, and I want some ball players signed. And I'll never forget, Al Campanis jumped up out of his chair, and he was a good scout, mm-hmm. a good scouting director. He said, Buzzy, Buzzy, Buzzy. Buzzy, yeah, what's that, Al? He said, and Al said, Buzzy, do you have any idea what the fatality rate would be if we wholesale signed players? Buzzy said, I don't give a goddamn what the fatality rate is. I need some players in the farm. Said, we've exhausted all the good players and we're not doing real good. I want some ball players signed. And I'd like to have about 100 signed that before the draft.
Yes.
So they argued, but we did them and discussed back and forth. Finally, Buzzy took the floor again. He said, okay, here it is. I want some players signed. I don't make any difference. What the money? What it costs? I want some players signed. We need them. You know, we need some new blood, so on and so forth. And he said, Hugh and Bert, we were sitting together back in the room. He said, Al, I want you to put Hugh Alexander and Bert Wells, the most two experienced scouts I've got, and we were free agent scouts back mm-hmm. in those days. And I want you two guys to keep your area, because I had Oklahoma, Texas, Bert, he had Kansas and Colorado, Nebraska, mm-hmm. those states. And he said, I want you guys to become, I mean, keep your own territory, but I want you to become signers. Both of you are well experienced, both of you are great signers of ball players. And any time one of our scouts get in trouble throughout the whole United States on signing a player, I want one of you or both of you to fly into that city and help that man sign, help our scouts sign those ball players. And Al, he didn't like that too well, but he wasn't much he could do about it because the big boss is talking. Yes, so Bert Wells and I became, for several years, became until the draft, we became associate signers. We'd get a call from Cliff Alexander up in Ohio, and he'd mm-hmm. say, well, I need some help. Well, I'm here on mm-hmm. Don Gullett.
Yeah.
You know, I really need some help. But we'd go right in there. And both of us would fly in there, he'd pick us up, or one or both of us. And we'd say, okay, where are you on your talks with the boy and his family? Mm-hmm. Maybe not Gullett, because he sat out of sign, because he was a local boy, but whoever it might be, where are you in this deal? Where are you? Well, I'm up to $40,000 bonus, and the family wants 60 or 65 or 70, and we're kind of at a standstill. Okay, let's map out some strategy here before we go out. What time we got an appointment? 7 o'clock. Okay, let's map out a little strategy here. Figured all that. So Bert and I get out there. We both threw money away like it was water anyway. Like I always said, it's only money. It's only money. But anyway, we go out. The first thing you know, one of us, and Bert and I could work together so well, and a lot of times two people cannot work together. They can't do it.
Yeah, it takes special combination. That didn't happen often in life.
And because somebody's going to get their feelings hurt over mm-hmm. something. So Bert and I made a deal among ourselves. Anytime I got in trouble, if I'm doing the talking, I have the floor, and he's sitting over listening, and he knows I'm getting in trouble. He can see, he can figure out that I'm fixed to get my ass really in some trouble here in about 5 minutes. And he'd just take over the conversation and get me out of it, and I would do the same thing for him, and neither one of us ever got mad at one another. Never got mad. We'd laugh about it later on. He said, boy, you fixed to really get in some deep water. And I had to bail you out. I said, that's right.
That's right.
And the last time I had to bail you out, but we got along good.
Yeah.
So over the period of time, in those years, we signed Steve Garvey, Billy Russell, Davy Lopes, Tom Pichardi,
Ron Say. That's the longest lasting infield in Major League history.
Yeah, but Bert Wells and I helped sign all those players.
I know.
So we never really got the credit that Hugh Alexander signed. Well, he and I signed Frank Howard, for mm-hmm. Christ's sake, at 2 o'clock in the morning in Columbus, Ohio. And but it was, they knew in Los Angeles who did the work, and we got paid accordingly. I mean, they took care of us salary-wise, everything. But over the years, in the players that I signed and helped sign, there were about 63 of them went to the big league, which is unheard of. Yeah. Just, you know,
That's,
and it's a good feeling.
You bet it is. I'd like to, as you agreed to come back in the near future, because we've been talking for 2 hours, or you have, a few comments here and there, and continue our discussion. I have lots of notes. I like to talk about your years specifically with the Indians, and then later with the Dodgers. You were with them for several years, then the Phillies and the Cubs.
I was with Cleveland 14 years. I went to the White Sox 4. I went to Brooklyn, Los Angeles 15. And I went to the Phillies 16.
In every case, every team you went to, they won pennants, they won World Series.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that without me saying that. But some way I have either been lucky or whatever it might be. But, you know, I never worked for a bad club. The Cleveland Ball Club were great. They won pennants.
They won. Fantastic.
All the years I was there. Then I went to White Sox. And you know,
they had the Go-Go White Sox.
That's what we had, the Go-Go White Sox, and finished second. 3 out of 4 years to the Yankees.
Yep, sure.
And made a run at it for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then I got the job that Brooklyn Dodgers won. And I went over there and won the World Series in 55. Mm-hmm. Went in the World Series, got beat by the Yankees in 56. Mm-hmm. Won the World Series in 59. Won the World Series in 63 with the Yankees. Won the World Series in 65 with Minnesota, got beat 4 straight ball games in 66 by Baltimore. So everything was World Series or championship, wasn't it?
That's right.
Then I went to the Phillies, and they were terrible.
They were terrible.
In 1972, the second year I was over there, Paul Owens now was the general manager, we won 57 games that year. That's all we won. Out of 162, so we lost, 105 games, right? But listen to this. That year, we won 57 games, right? Mm-hmm. Steve Carlton won 27 of them. There was only 30 other games that he didn't win.
Remind me of Ned Day when he pitched for the...
In 1975, only 3 years later, we won the pennant. Mm-hmm. Got beat by Cincinnati. Won the pennant in 76. Won the pennant in 77. Mm-hmm. Won the pennant in 78. Got beat. I mean, didn't win the pennant in 79. Mm-hmm. Won the World Series in 1980. Faltered on the strike year in 81. Mm-hmm. Made a run for it, mm-hmm. but it was a strike year. 82, we didn't do any good. 83, we won the pennant and got beat by Baltimore in the World Series. So there was a winner, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Went to the Cubs and won the pennant in 89.
Mm-hmm.
So every club I've ever worked for has been a winner. And people, other scouts and baseball people say, boy, you got lucky so-and-so. Every time you work for clubs, they're always winners. I say they weren't always winners, but somewhere along the line, a Paul Owens, a Dallas Green, a Hugh Alexander, or a Jim Fry, we made them into a contending club. Mm-hmm. We traded around and we made them into a contending club. It's just that simple. And you can't be right all the time, but here's one thing that I want you to be sure that you remember, and it'll be there.
Okay.
When you trade, this was the philosophy that Paul Owens and I put together in 1971. Which has been 20 years ago, hasn't it? When you trade, you're the general manager, and you got a right-hand man like Hugh Alexander, and you and him trade to try to win a pennant. You have to be right 7 out of 10 times. You have to be right. And if you're not, you'll get fired. You will fall by the wayside. You have to be right 7 out of 10.
That's a high percentage.
That's high. That's real high. But you have to do it. Yeah, Paul Owens and I went over all the years back and figured that thing around. And the successful baseball people are right 7 out of 10 times. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
It's absolutely amazing. And if you took all your stats in your computer, it would show right up on your computer that's right. You have to be right 7 out of 10. And that's absolutely amazing. But you have to. If you don't, you get fired. Yeah. Probably, I really don't know this because I don't know anything about business, but you do. The fatality rate on employees in baseball is probably the highest in the whole world, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, no doubt.
You know, I'm so lucky in 57 years. You know, I never got fired. I might have got close to a couple of times, but I never got fired. But most baseball people end up getting fired.
Yeah, just becomes part of the...
It just becomes part of the game.
That's right.
You don't do the job, you get fired. If you're an area scout in Florida, mm-hmm. and you don't do a real good job, you'll get fired. You might get another job, but you'll get fired. I know I'm going to get fired at Cleveland in 1949. I know I'm going to get fired. That's the biggest chance I've ever seen. I'm going to get fired. But what was it, 50 or 51?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 51. I know I'm going to get fired. I can see it coming because Greenberg and I, Hank Greenberg and I, he was the foreign director. He and I would feed at Crossways, the atmosphere at Crossways. And I remember when we were driving down the highway one day in Texas, been a year or so. I said, hey, you so-and-so, you're going to get fired at the end of the year. That's the biggest change I've ever... I'm talking to myself.
Yes.
You're going to get fired. So then I said to myself, I'm sure my thoughts was, yeah, what are you going to do about that? I said, so I'm going to get another job. I'm going to start right now trying to get me another job because I know I'm going to get fired. I don't really know it, but I got a feeling I'll get fired.
You can
fired.
Feel it in the air.
So I got a hold of the White Sox later on in September, and I said, hey, I might want to change job. You got a job. Well, I had a job.
Yeah.
Now, just before my contract ran out, I took the job with the White Sox and resigned from Cleveland because I know I'm going to get fired. I know I'm going to get fired. So I said, well, I'll just get out here.
Yeah. Get out while the getting's good.
While the getting's good, right.
Huey, thank you very much for...
Well, I've enjoyed it. I just wish we could have...